Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Brett Hayes, you're an expert on the Supreme Court. Bring us up to date. This is a small question.
Right, small question. Well, I mean, so the court's doing some interesting stuff. Obviously, we've talked about what it's done on things like affirmative action and the politics of gay marriage in the past. We've had now oral arguments on some of the gay marriage cases. There are two of them that have gone before the court. Now the court is turning its attention to some other areas that are less clearly divided on ideological lines, although ideology will certainly show up in some form. Last week, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments on whether you can patent aspects of DNA. Essentially, you know, we have research companies that are investigating different elements of the human genome, and they map out different elements of this, elements that in fact can lead to breakthroughs for medical technologies. And the question is whether in fact that is something that we should consider the intellectual property of a company, or whether this is something that just is in nature and therefore is open for anybody to use and rely upon. So the court is now facing, you know, issues that, you know, kind of inconceivable even two decades ago, but that are really at the front lines of technology and what it will mean to do research in the area of something like DNA in over the next century or longer.
So if one was a predicting man, which I am, because I always figure people won't remember exactly what I said.
Right.
But, you know, you have a Republican majority on that court. It's a 5-4 court. We know that. And this is one of those pro-business rulings. You know, these people have done the work. They are entitled to the money. And therefore, one could predict that you'd have a 5-4 court on the matter of whether or not the genome could be patented.
Yeah. So that, I think that's right in terms of where you would initially, that's the kind of shoot from the hip prediction.
That's me.
Yeah, well, and I think, I mean, there may be some cause for that. But what we've seen with things like intellectual property, it doesn't often break on ideological lines. It can, but it doesn't often. And simply because individuals on the court, when they're selected with ideology in mind for a handful of issues. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Bush administration appointees were appointed with an eye towards executive power. These were individuals that were appointed because the Bush administration knew they would be sympathetic to what they wanted to do for the war on terror, you know, and a host of other issues as well. And, you know, things like abortion issues, affirmative action, etc. But, you know, what's not a salient issue when a justice is being nominated and eventually confirmed is something like intellectual property, so that you can get a different distribution of votes than what you might think if you're thinking about kind of traditional high profile political issues. And so sometimes, you know, on these issues, the Supreme Court will often be unanimous or near unanimous. And you think, the court's almost never that way. Actually, the court's often unanimous. It just happens to be on issues that are not as high profile as many of the ones that we're really paying attention to. So all that is to say that sometimes the voting coalitions on issues like intellectual property or maritime law are quite different than what we'd expect going in.
We're now being a little bit spoiled in that we're being allowed to hear the voices of the justices. You know, it's just ridiculous. We should be allowed to watch the oral arguments. If, after all, it's the Supreme Court, and they really are a supra-legislature in my mind. But we say, no, you can't do that. So we hear them after the fact. But when I hear Anthony Kennedy, I think of him in a different way now that I know what he's like, his voice. And so I'm wondering what your view is on that new development.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great thing. I mean, I certainly agree with you. I would like to see the court open itself up. I would like to see, you know, C-SPAN 5 or whatever
sure.
we're on now that would cover the court, that we could see oral arguments. I think the court actually does itself a bit of a disservice when it does not show itself, because it makes it much easier for us to assume that the business on the court is like the business in the executive or the business in the legislature. And the business is different, right? It's not to say that ideology is not important or is not influential. And I don't want to make that claim. But what I want to suggest, though, is that the forms of argumentation, the forms that those ideologies take, and the ways that they're channeled through rule of law considerations have profound effect. And I think the people would benefit from seeing that. And note there how limited that exposure is. You're talking about only oral argument. You're not talking about opening up, you know, their conference deliberations where you're taking a vote or, you know, seeing pre-drafts of opinions. Sure. You know, all of that would still be kind of behind the curtain. And so the Supreme Court would still be an institution that would be very secretive, yet we would see more, and I think people would have a better understanding of the operation of politics on the court.
Going back to the question, do you see a difference in the way that we understand the Supreme Court just because of this little snippets that we're allowed to hear?
Not really. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen it in polling data or anything to suggest that. I don't know how many people actually consume it.
Who listens to NPR and Nina Totenberg.
Yeah, right. People who are court junkies, news junkies, political junkies, you know, I think we readily consume it. I can't wait for the release of oral arguments. But, you know, it's really interesting. I'm guessing that you know, really hasn't trickled down yet. Now, that being said, I think it's useful even for it to be on the news, right? That we get, as you rightly point out, a snippet of Justice Kennedy saying something. And that might, in fact, help inform people's understanding of the court. But I don't think we've really seen much change in the way people perceive the courts. If anything, the trend on public opinion has been to see the court as more political over time, not less political. And I think suggests that, you know, people aren't really spending a lot of time listening to the ways in which the court goes about oral arguments.
Very quickly, Brad Hayes, and we only have a minute or so, North Korea. Interesting to me in that the rhetoric of John Kerry has changed significantly here, in that there's a softer line, and that happened after he went to visit China. Yeah. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, this was, you know, a really interesting case where the Obama administration took a fairly aggressive position against North Korea when it started making its kind of same old noises. And that seemed to be moving us in a kind of an escalation direction. And so when Kerry was in China, I think he had some frank conversations with the Chinese about using them as an ally of North Korea, as a nation with major influence, to try to reel in some of that rhetoric and some of their movement towards greater nuclear capacity. And I'm sure China, part of that conversation was China saying that, okay, well, we need to cool this off. Right. And, you know, now Kerry's even said that he's open to talks, right? Although
two-way talks.
Yeah, yeah, two-way talks. Although North Korea would have to abandon their nuclear weapons program, which I don't think is likely to happen. So, you know, what you see, I think, here is that notion of strategic patience that's been used in association with the Obama administration, that notion that they are willing to engage, they express that willingness, you know, if something happens, and we'll wait for that thing to happen before we engage.
Brad Hayes is assistant professor of political science at Union College and the professor in residence right here at WAMC. We love having him on. Brad, you always bring something to us, and we so much appreciate it.